Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What's the importance of prairie land to us in urban areas? Well, it is closer to your home than one might think. We'll talk about that in a bit. And speaking of home, how green is yours? And what is its green potential? We'll begin there on today's program. The 14th Annual Green Homes Festival takes place a week from Saturday at Faust Park in Chesterfield. It'll be hosted by the Earthways Center at the Missouri Botanical Garden. The center promotes sustainability through environmental education. Joining me from the center are Gene Ponze as Green Resources Manager and Richard Riley as the center's Home Energy Manager. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having us, Don.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Gene, let me begin with you. This is the 14th year of the festival. How has this all changed, the whole response to the festival and some of the things that the festival suggests we do? How has it changed over the years?
Well, first I want to mention that the festival this year is in a new location change, the Butterfly House in Faust Park, which is a Missouri Botanical Garden facility. When we started this festival, there was Earth Day in the spring and Green Homes used to be in the fall, and that was it. There were not other environmental events. And now they're being hosted by communities and workplaces, and there's a big greening movement in faith-based communities and at schools. So there's a lot more of this stuff in the popular culture. It challenges us at the Earthway Center to keep Green Homes Festival relevant and cover all the bases of what might make your home green. But the really exciting thing is, I think, the level of engagement and the level of knowledge and the level of interest among people of all ages and all walks of life and all kinds of economic status in greening up our homes.
People are making changes then?
Oh, yeah. It's great. And there's certainly more to do, but things are more affordable. They're more accessible. There are many more kinds of partnerships between utilities. Ameren Missouri, our sponsor, big provider of incentives. MSD is another sponsor this year. They've been promoting rainscaping on public and private property to conserve stormwater. The whole nursery and landscape industry promoting native plants and making those available and encouraging people to grow milkweeds for monarchs and a lot more resources.
Well, we'll be talking in more detail about some of those things as the program moves along. But Richard Riley, what are some of the other options that homeowners have that are affordable and, let's face it, easy?
Right. Well, weatherization work, which can include air sealing and improving insulation in one's home, is some of what's often referred to as the low-hanging fruit in the energy efficiency world. So I think it all begins with a home energy audit. And that's something, depending on the business you contract with, that can be in the $200 to $400 or $500 variety. But what the information you get from a home energy audit report enables you to do is to not spend your money unwisely on areas of your home that don't have any difficulties or troubles. So this initial investment gives you the information of how your home's working today. And from that, you can make a plan on how to improve its performance and energy efficiency, its comfort, and the indoor air quality as well in the future. And you can map that out. So an energy audit, insulation, air sealing, perhaps some furnace and ductwork upgrades are the kinds of things that fall in line in terms of priorities.
What's involved with an energy audit?
Well, a certified professional in most instances will come to your house, review your utility bills, review with you any comfort problems, issues, energy bill problems that you've identified as a homeowner and you want to take care of, modify, and improve. They'll examine the house with a variety of diagnostic tools like a combustion analyzer, a blower door, perhaps an infrared camera, etc. And there's nothing about this is like too good to be true or voodoo or anything like that. And at the Green Homes Festival, that's part of what we want to pass on to visitors is that, hey, you can hear a lot about this stuff, but it's simply not too good to be true. You'll get information from the diagnostic equipment that the auditor uses that will basically tell you how leaky your house is, and they can even calculate the size of the hole that all the little cracks and crevices sort of add up to. So with that information, you can really zoom in and pinpoint on the areas that need the most improvement and then determine the most cost-effective ways to make those improvements.
Gene, you and I have been talking about just this part of it for a long, long time.
Yep.
Do you have any sense that this has resonated? Are more people doing it? Can you tell that through your work?
Yes, I can, Don. And I work a lot in businesses now, so I'm meeting people out in their workplaces as opposed to Richard is meeting people really sort of at that home level. I think there's a lot more awareness about energy efficiency, about the value of energy efficiency. There's certainly a lot more interest in renewable energy, even in continuing to put solar on our homes, although some of the rebates that had supported that for a while have gone away. But understanding the value of energy efficiency, not just changing your light bulbs, but finding the leaks, doing the unglamorous things, sealing them up, and then some of these other measures. People do get that. There are a lot of people who have done it and who can testify about the value in comfort and in utility savings.
A lot of money can fly out the window or around, or around the window. Mm-hmm. Are there any numbers out there to, you know, typically, Richard, how much can it cost a homeowner to have, you know, poor insulation?
Well, those are the kinds of things that can cost, you know, hundreds of dollars a year, if not thousands, depending on the size of the home, the paucity of insulation, as it were, and the age of the heating and cooling system. So, again, the cool thing about the energy audit is that it's talking about your house. It's not talking about houses in general. You're getting this information about your specific place. So I think that most folks can find that if they institute the improvement suggested in an energy audit, that they can save 20, 30, even 40% in their energy bills with that investment.
What should people be looking for? Is it just look at the bill and say this bill seems high or it's been getting higher over the years? Or should they go around kind of feeling around the windows and what have you?
Well, it's really easy to feel around the windows during a blower door test because it pretty much sets all that stuff up to be able to do it easily.
What is that test?
A blower door test is one in which a fan is placed in a doorway. And it blows out of the house, and it simulates a 20-mile-an-hour wind against all sides of the house at the same time. So while that's going on, no parakeets are getting sucked out the door or anything like that.
That's good.
You can walk around with a little artificial smoke machine, an IR camera, or other instruments, and literally watch the airflow through the holes, just like it does perhaps at a slower pace when the wind's not blowing as much or the blower door's not on. So I think that's pretty significant information to work with. And as far as the energy bills go, looking at your seasonal load, which is what you spend for heating during winter and cooling during summer, and learning how to read your utility bills to separate that from your base load, and then comparing that perhaps to some averages will let you know if your problems with you've got too many refrigerators, freezers, and computers going, or your insulation and furnace system could use a little TLC because the seasonal load's too high.
And, of course, when it's time to replace anything, last year we knew we were at the end of the useful life of the furnace in the main heating and cooling zone of my house. You want to upgrade to the most energy efficiency that you can buy, and definitely upgrade to, you know, start with Energy Star as a standard. Don't ever get anything less than Energy Star, which it's hard to even find anything anymore that's not Energy Star qualified unless you really dig under the counters. And then buy up in energy efficiency and take advantage of utility rebates. Ameren and Laclede both offer rebates for upgrading to some extent, for tuning up, for adding in things as simple as programmable thermostats and changing your light bulbs, and as complex and, you know, longer term as updating a whole HVAC system.
Gene, you mentioned a moment ago that some of the incentives have been lost, particularly with regard to solar. What's been lost and why?
Well, the incentive from the investor-owned utilities in our area, that's Ameren. The way in which the Renewable Energy Standard was developed for Missouri, it started with an initiative petition, and then that went through a rulemaking process with the Public Service Commission, which mandated that the investor-owned utilities should pay a certain amount in rebates, and how that was structured was all worked out. The power companies got to a point where they said they had maxed out the amount that was available in rebates, and so the legality of that whole standard kind of kicked in. there still is a federal tax credit that runs until the end of 2016, which is an election year. We'll see if renewable energy is an election issue again in this next presidential cycle.
Sure, and that especially applies to the solar rebates.
Yes.
Ameren and Laclede both have rebates for furnaces and air conditioning and other varieties, so their websites are a good place to turn to find out about what's available on the energy efficiency side now.
How costly I'm trying to think of the word, applying solar panels to your home, how costly can that be?
Well, that can, those projects can, again, depending on the size of the installation. But
I guess I'm getting, is it an expensive process?
Yeah, it probably $15,000 to $30,000 for most homes.
So if you, in the days when you could take advantage of a 30% federal tax credit, if you itemize your tax deductions, and a rebate from your local utility and take advantage of those both, that was a really great deal. Now, the conventional wisdom is every dollar you spend on energy efficiency is going to knock $2 to $5 off the eventual cost of a renewable energy installation like solar panels, photovoltaics. So energy efficiency is not as glamorous as solar power. Sealing up leaks is never going to set people on fire like a solar panel will, but it's a very important underpinning before you invest in solar. Get that energy load down, and then you need to generate less using the more expensive system.
How about geothermal? I hear about it a lot, but I don't note that a lot of people are going that route.
Well, it's extremely popular in outstate environments where there's no access to natural gas. It's been used. I put it in projects when I was in the building industry in the 90s.
Just explain for a moment for those who don't know exactly what we're talking about.
Gotcha.
I should have done that.
Well, a ground source heat pump or geothermal system is a heat exchanger that runs through a loop through the ground. It's the same thing as an air-to-air heat pump. But this one works in the ground. It makes it more energy efficient because there's a constant temperature down there.
And more people are going that in the rural parts of the state.
In the rural parts of the state, that's very popular because they don't have access to high efficiency natural gas lines, except in some small towns. In St. Louis, it can be a good option. But if you're building a small, really energy efficiency house to start with, like I've participated with Habitat for Humanity here in St. Louis to design LEED Platinum homes for their home buyers. Those homes tend to be so well insulated that they don't make geothermal systems that small to provide the heating and cooling needs. So there's a variety of other energy efficient heating and cooling options that can be used. It's all about pairing up and synchronizing the best efficiency you can get on the HVAC side with what you're doing with the building envelope.
Gene, it sounds like the manufacturers maybe are ahead of the consumers on some of this in terms of what they've been able to do and accomplish over the last 10 or 15 years.
Well, and you have to think, Don, about manufacturers that are generating products that are being sold across the U.S. or being sold internationally in parts of the U.S. on the coasts where utility rates are much, much higher than they are in our area. We have some of the lowest utility rates in the nation. There's a bigger payback for those more expensive systems. But again, we just can never underestimate and can't say too often the importance of finding those wasted watts and getting them out of the system. That's why utilities continue to invest in energy efficiency incentives, because they can document the number of kilowatt hours that are saved by changing a light bulb or by changing out, certain sizes of heating and air conditioning. And that's the prime route to using less energy and using it more wisely.
We've talked a little bit about what's going on inside the home. Let's go outside. When we come back, we have to take a break. We're talking about the greening of our homes, if you will, in conjunction with the Green Homes Festival that's taking place on Saturday, the 20th of this month. With me in studio is Gene Ponzi and Richard Wiley, both of them from the Earthway Center at the Missouri Botanical Garden. We'll come back and continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. And we'll be continuing our conversation on greening your home, if you will, in conjunction with the Green Homes Festival coming up on the 20th of this month. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The public is weighing in today on a proposal to scale back restrictions on coal ash landfills in Franklin County. The all-day hearing with the county's Board of Commissioners is the latest installment in a six-year battle over Ameren's plans to build a coal ash landfill in Labadie in Franklin County. The county approved its landfill regulations in 2011, but litigation has prevented Ameren from moving ahead with construction. Normandy school officials will meet again tonight to discuss the district's financial picture. They say they'll have enough money to operate for an entire school year beginning in August. The district's finances have been stretched thin by the costs of tuition and transportation for transfer students. And Democrats will attempt to keep a spotlight on Governor Bruce Rauner's proposed budget cuts when an Illinois Senate committee holds a hearing today. The hearing is about the potential suspension of energy assistance to senior citizens, the disabled, and low-income families. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our guests from the Missouri Botanical Garden, Gene Ponzi and Richard Riley. Gene, I'll turn to you. You mentioned rainscaping a little early. Let's talk about the outside and some of the things we can do to help out in that area.
Well, rainscaping is a term that covers a set of strategies, many of which use native plants as the anchors for plant-based installations, rain gardens, berms, bioswales, to capture and hold rainwater where it falls instead of having it run off and overload our combined sewers. So the Metropolitan Sewer District is a big proponent of this kind of green infrastructure as a way to use the power of plants. It doesn't put the concrete guys out of work. It brings in a whole new business sector, the landscaping and the nursery sector, and uses the homeowner's savvy and your property, the way your property is configured, to prevent stormwater runoff. And the big advantage, the additional advantage to that is when you use native plants in a rainscaping feature, you also help bring some biodiversity back into your yard. So beneficial insects, insect larva becomes food for baby birds. You can plant milkweeds that helps restore the monarch populations, and everything gets a lot more interesting. And people then want to get outside and interact with nature.
People really seem to have caught on to the monarch butterfly dilemma, have they not?
The monarch has been an amazing poster species for our area, Don, because we're right smack in the middle of the flyway, the migratory flyway, 2,500 miles between Mexico and Canada. It's the only migrating butterfly. And the decline, the extreme decline in monarch populations, up to 90% over the last, I think, 9 or 10 years. Last year, with a lot of promotion of planting milkweeds, restoring milkweeds, and awareness in the general public, and also nectar species providing food for those migrating butterflies as well as the milkweeds they reproduce on, there was a teeny tiny little spike in the migrating monarch population. And that's all being watched and tagged by citizen scientists and professional scientists. Could have been because of weather conditions, but it's a way in which people, anyone, a kid, an adult, anywhere, can help restore a species and experience our power to make that difference.
How difficult is it to do this, to set up a rainscaping feature in your backyard, Richard?
Well, these are things that we've done with some success at Habitat for Humanity St. Louis, for example. And that was done in partnership with home buyers, with MSD, and with Habitat as a home building company. And so it's not as if they're without any challenges, but a lot of it has to do with, say, planning your home build and or your landscaping work from the get-go. And if you are able to minimize the number of impervious surface on your lot, you're in a much better position to have a greater amount of square footage, you know, take care of stormwater runoff that might come off the roof or come off the driveway or come from a basement drain and pump that gathers stormwater from below grade, and to slow its path out of your yard and into a heavily taxed infrastructure that is the MSD storm system.
So as you've indicated, this is a lot easier to do in most cases when you do it from the start, from the get-go, when you're building.
I think that's helpful because you have a particular substrate you need below the plants in order to make it work. And there is, of course, some maintenance involved. And if you're not well educated, that can be a challenge as well.
But there are a lot of different strategies you can use, Don. They range from full-scale rain gardens, and there are some in St. Louis that drain whole city blocks up in Old North St. Louis, to little tiny installations. The thing is to evaluate which of a number of strategies that range from some pervious paving, maybe it's pavers instead of a whole sidewalk, to rain gardens, to little islands of native plants, rain barrels under your downspouts. Which thing works best for your property? What sense does it make in terms of a process to install? And this is helping develop a whole new level of expertise and service in the landscaping industry. And we really do our best at the Earthway Center to make sure that we have all of these kind of strategies and resources for your home, indoors and out, represented at the Green Homes Festival.
Well, that's where people can take advantage of the expertise you have. That's one day a year, however.
Yes.
What about the rest of the year?
Well, relative to rainscaping, there's a great suite of information on MOBOT.org, the Missouri Botanical Gardens website, Rainscaping. It was developed by the Deer Creek Watershed Alliance. You've had folks there as your guests. To identify all these strategies and put them on a website in a way that you can mouse over, here's this one, and then click in and see, is this maybe right for me? How can I start to evaluate? And then as you go in, you get all the way to things like plant lists and contractors. So a really well-organized, very practical, nicely presented body of knowledge available anytime at no charge.
What is the difference between rainscaping and naturescaping?
Naturescaping is a term that the Missouri Department of Conservation has used a lot. That is specifically adding to the biodiversity, getting more life into your environment. Rainscaping is strategies that are designed to capture and hold rainwater, and there's a lot of overlap between them, but that's a little bit more of a specific functionality. And native plants make all of that happen so beautifully.
Richard, a lot of people don't want some of these critters in their environment. I mean, we're talking mosquitoes and some other things that can be semi-unpleasant or outright unpleasant.
Well, I think most of those can be managed with the right mix of plants. So you have plants that attract various kinds of insects, et cetera, and some of those take care of others that might be problematic to human comfort. But it's also as simple as having, say, nice trees and planting a deciduous tree on the south side of your house to let it shade your house in the summer and let that warm winter sunshine in the winter. Raking the leaves is a way to save a lot of money as well as soak up a lot of rainwater in the process. So it's just part of strategic thinking. And when done right, you can address the things you really don't want to happen with the things you really do want to happen and come up with a good combination of plants.
Gene, it's not rocket science, is it? I mean, it's all very practical stuff. And if you think about it a little bit, it just makes ultimate sense.
Oh, sure. And a lot of this is old knowledge. A lot of this is things that people have practiced for a really long time. But we've gotten more into the habit of incorporating ornamentals and exotics and breeding plants for foliage color and, you know, bloom size, as opposed to the ecological characteristics that we get out of native plants. And when people get engaged with this stuff, because there's a lot of do-it-yourself, there's a lot of affordable, sensible, you can do, it really helps engage us more with community businesses, with the nature around us, with feeling empowered that we can be in charge of things and not just have to have somebody else bail us out.
As time begins to wind down, let's go back to an old staple from our conversations in the past, and that's recycling. How are we doing with that?
Well, we're doing really well, Don. I think we have a terrific infrastructure in St. Louis. Service providers, you see recycling everywhere. You see it at Cardinals games. You see it at the airport. You see it at public events all over the place. I was at the Shakespeare Festival last night, and every trash can had a recycling container paired up with it. So the service is available. People are getting it. There's always going to be more to educate about it. You know, take your reusable bags instead of getting the plastic bags. We both got our reusable drinking containers here, reduce, reuse, recycle, and we've got a lot of great services working for us.
I'll point out to our audience, by the way, that we'll have a link to your website on ours at sdlpublicradio.org, where people can get a lot more information than we're able to talk about today. Let's talk a little bit about the event on the 20th. 70 different exhibits, is that number correct? Give us some sense of the kinds of things people can find there.
70 plus. Well, we try to cover with at least one exhibitor everything that can green your home, from building and remodeling to cleaning, landscaping, you know, all kinds of energy systems, insulation, solar power, wind power, geothermal, windows. We have alternative transportation. We paint a metro bus every year, so we're promoting using our transit system. We've got solar car races for the kids. Eco Elvis is coming back from Kansas City. He's a towering crowd pleaser. And we try to make it fun and useful, and we encourage people to bring your project ideas, because you can talk with an expert that is doing something along the lines of what you're doing. You can get information as well as inspiration.
Is that, go ahead, Richard.
Well, yeah, I wanted to say that we'll have our home energy efficiency demonstration wall there, and it'll be staffed by certified energy auditors. So it really is a good place to come and demystify any questions you might have about residential energy efficiency. I'm working with artists William Burton Jr. and Robert Ketchins to design and paint the mural with kids of all ages who attend on the Metro bus, and that will be a mural that clearly communicates many messages about energy efficiency and renewable energy.
That'll be an active vehicle that we'll be seeing around
town. Yes, for a year more. Yes.
Well, you've already made the point clear that it's a kid-friendly event.
Yes.
But there's something I saw in your literature called Wings Over Water that I was wondering about. That sounds fascinating.
This is really thrilling. This is the first time we will have the World Bird Sanctuary participate in the Green Homes Festival, and they're coming with Missouri American Water that sponsors a passport. You take your program book around and you get a little leaf stamp in every area of the festival, and then you can get a prize. And Missouri American Water is a big sponsor of World Bird Sanctuary. So they're bringing World Bird with them, and Wings Over Water will be aquatic bird species flying over us, interpreted about those phenomenal birds of prey that are really inspiring relatives of ours in nature.
They must be well-trained birds.
They are, well, they are trained, and there is an amazing relationship between the humans and the raptors, the birds of prey at World Bird. Very respectful, very knowledgeable, and very inspiring.
That sounds like something to see. I remind our listeners that the 14th annual Green Homes Festival is taking place on Saturday, June 20th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Butterfly House in Faust Park in Chesterfield. Thank you so much, Gene Ponzi and Richard Riley, for being with us. It's been a fascinating hour, half hour, as it always is with you guys.
Thank you, Don.
Hope you have a great festival. Gene Ponzi and Richard Riley. Coming up, more on conservation, conserving our prairies. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.